I think it's just lack of knowledge and preparation for the outside of work of outside academia. And so what we realize, the core problem, the heart of the problem, is to understand the other side and to talk to them before that, why you are still in university. So networking.
Hello, Beatrice and Lena.
Hey, Ofer.
Hi, Lena. Hi, Ofer. Really nice to talk to you tonight. Well, tonight for me in London and today morning for you.
Yes. Hi, Beatrice. Good to see you.
Beatrice, we have contacted because both me and Lena saw a call out for a very cool venture called Smart Tribe. And we said that is very interesting and exactly in the realm of what we are trying to relay across this podcast. So you have been very kind, agreed to talk to us. So tell us a bit about yourself and where you are today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. I'm really proud of Smart Tribe and what we do. And I'm super, super happy to speak to both of you and to audience. Who is actually very close to my heart because I have a lot of family in Israel. So even more, it's a warmer welcome for me. Well, in order to understand Tribe, I need to start with myself. Maybe not a humble beginning, but I think it will be easy to understand. So I have about 20 years of professional experience working as a management consultant. And I was specializing in commercializing new technologies, very often coming from scientific research, but not always. At the beginning of my career, I worked very closely with the defense sector. And when we're transferring the technologies to the civilian world, and then I worked with different corporates, Fortune 500 companies, helping them to solve problems with new technologies. So I've traveled the world, truly, in the hunt for scientists and scientific research to transfer to companies. Very often, our choice was not to go through universities, although we've done a lot of university transfers, and the reason was because it's just time-consuming. And I have learned very quickly that the model of the technology transfer offices, not because they are bad, it's just because they are not suitable for companies' urgency and speed and requirements. So we very often brought the scientists to companies, create lab for them and work, or just acquire startups. I lived in Israel, I lived in Russia, I lived in China, Latin America, United States, and probably everywhere in Europe from a few months to a few years. So I truly hunted all the scientists around the world. So one thing really struck me, it was how much is out there, truly, from Vietnam, Japan, everywhere. We always hear about Silicon Valley. We hear about Israel. We hear about London, Germany, you know, all these big scientific hubs. But there's so much out there I've seen. And I realized so much of the talent coming from academia and tech is there, which is totally wasted. Also, I have the, I think, ability to understand better. I was always the middle person between the companies and scientists. So I understand both sides. I had left academia many years ago and I was more interested in the business side. But I understand where the academia is coming from, what are the pressures and so on. So I had this for many years working between those two worlds, industry and academia, understood that those two worlds don't speak the same language. You know, the research papers are written in an esoteric language nobody understands and reads. So much West.
So if you had to estimate from your experience with academy and licensing tech, basically from academy towards industry across the world, if you had to estimate how much is left on like the lab floor, like the editing room floor, that fails to go through the motions and really transfer, and we miss out those really nice ventures.
less than 2% of current technologies in the world comes from scientific research. Less than 2%. Okay, so around, let's say 70% of the research we cannot commercialize, obviously, which is fine. But what about the rest? What if we even add this one more percent? What a difference would make? So much is there, right? So this is one of this of the knowledge. There's 165 million research papers in the world. Well, you know, how much wealth of knowledge is there? How about we translate this? This is another idea I have maybe for later. But so this is problem with the knowledge, less than 2%. And then the people, around 80% of academics in the developed world, which includes United States and Europe, have to find jobs outside of academia because there is simply not enough places for them at universities. And it's getting worse because, for example, here in the UK, there's a lot of university being laying off academics because of the COVID and so on. There are a lot of scientists who find jobs, also thanks to COVID in the life science, but at the university, there is not enough space. 80%, worse, 60% of PhDs at some point in their life will find themselves jobless, simply unemployed. So all those years, you know, for me, it's very striking. All those years of incredible work, the most people want, the most rewarded, let's say, in academia, knowledgeable and trained, find themselves in a situation. It's a waste for the academics, but I think it's a waste for everybody else, including the industry. So I had this dream for many years to, how about make the bridge between those two worlds? And I know there have been lots of attempts to do it, but I don't think they're efficient enough. Usually the attempts are between institutions, university collaboration, and companies. Some of them are very good and working out, but they are still limited, geographically limited, and they are too efficient. It's between professors and so on. Also, the whole concept of the technology transfers, you know, with the idea pretty much across all universities around the world, about 70 to 75% of university keeping the royalties, making very difficult for the researchers go through that route as well. You know,
so there is not a real incentive. So they can do this, but there's not a real incentive because they have, like the PIs have their positions. And there is no, unless they're like have personal aspirations to release something outside of academia, outside of like the world of publication and grant writing, but there is no like real monetary incentive from the university for a 10-year PI to say, I'm gonna IP it, keep it a secret for a couple of years, develop it into technology instead of publications, fancy publication, and building my career academy. And of course, it trickles down, right?
That's right.
To postdocs, to grad students.
Yes, yeah. I mean it's on average, it's across the, you know, some universities are better, some worse, but on average that's how it works, and it's nobody else's fault. This is how it is, and it has been for many years, for decades. The academia as an institution has not been challenged, has been the same for many decades. You know, people paying the same money for fees and for many years. So I think it's a little bit changed. Also, the timing is interesting. I think the newer generations of scientists are a little bit fed up with this. And they say, actually, I want to take my research off the shelf. I do care what is happening around me. Yesterday, I spent a whole day working on our product. And I looked through the people profiles, our academics. We have a few thousand people on the platform. And you know, the short introduction very often include those words. I want to make an impact. I want to change. I want to help. So it's not just scientists were doing for the heck of science and develop things, you know, which might work in the 10,000 years, but it's they really care what's happening around them. So that's the timing is interesting. The other thing which we also found is the attitudes of the governments, especially in Europe and Canada, but I think US is not different, is the grants. Accessibility of grants, many governments saying, you know what, we actually don't are not so happy to keep giving you the government grants, you have to find industry partner in order to get something. You have to give us something back. So there's more pressure from this perspective as well.
So there was a very extensive work by the NIH a couple of years ago to really understand in the US, they're funding so many postdocs and so much research, and they wanted to research if, as you said, most of them don't stay in the academia, but goes to the job market. We put up this amount of dollars into training. What did they give back to society in productivity? And they found that life sciences, because they had such a plethora of postdoc, was really down, like significantly down the list in giving back. It takes much more time. They earn less money. They earn less. They pay less taxes as opposed to computational science and physicists and stuff like that. And in commercializing technologies, it was the same problem. Less, most of the research was not commercialized, was not being publicly available for the benefit of everybody else. Yeah, that was like when I began my PhD. So I realized as well that there is a sort of a problem here, and I wanna go back. So you say about 80% end up outside of academia. And so we know it's kind of they are left outside of academia. They meant to continue in an academic route, but the spaces are limited. So only the best of the best are staying in. Are they just going there, or you think they're also leaving academia not ready for the private sector?
I mean, the whole topic, I mean, tech commercialization is one thing and challenge with that, but the whole topic of academics and PhD students leaving academia and finding themselves unprepared for the job market outside is totally another big, big issue. Really, really complex. From so many problems with that. Number one, industry does not recognize PhD as a qualification. Okay, so very often when we introduce PhD to a company, they say, well, you're a student, so you need to get the job experience. I say, well, actually PhD should be recognized as a qualification. So it's a lot of education like that. Another thing, very often people with PhDs, they are accepting jobs which are, I would say, below them. They should start from much higher positions. They can offer much more. Also, they have incredible transferable skills. We in Smart Rob, we have published a report on 35 transferable skills to academia of PhDs. They just need to know how to position themselves. So it's another thing. What drives me crazy sometimes is so many academics agree to do things for free for industry. Is because, you know, writing research papers for free, somebody asks questions, so I will do extra research because I'm happy somebody asked me something, and I just said, no, those companies have budget for that. You should charge them. And it's the also even this asking question, well, this cost £1,000 or dollars, is very often people have challenge problem with this.
So this is a problem with the I don't know if self-esteem, but the self-valuation of a PhD student?
I think it's just lack of knowledge and preparation for the outside academia. And so what we realize, the core problem, the heart of the problem, is to understand the other side and to talk to them before that, why you are still in university. So networking, what we doing right now, you know, we know how to use social media. And the best way to understand and prepare yourself for going to industry, not just working, you know, working for companies, maybe you want to do your own startup, maybe something else, maybe you want to stay at university and you just want to do consulting for companies. All kind of collaboration with industry. What we say, how about you learn about it before while speaking to the industry people? And they are really, really welcome to talk about it. So that's what we came up with, the idea of Smart Tribe. I'm going a little bit backwards now. So all kind of problems I've seen, and also when about a year ago I've met my co-founder Chris Jack, who is a computer scientist, and is very passionate about the same problem. He's got a great academic record, and he used to be a chief data scientist in Mendeley and then in Elsevier. So his knowledge about academia is much, much deeper than mine. Mine was good, but from very business perspective, I couldn't understand, why don't you ask money for something, you know, a very logical and pragmatic way. And he said, well, because this is how you think, and so on. So we are very good match. I know different understanding of those two words, but from different perspective, caring very much about the same problems to want to solve. And that's why we started a Smart Tribe. I decided that if you want to do something, I was so passionate about this problem, I stopped working and said, this is it. This is the moment I really want to do it, solving the problem. And I met Chris. I said, oh my God, perfect.
So Chris was on board from day one, or you had to convince him? Because it's interesting, because you're in a duo, you're the exact conflict you talked about before. So the PhD, what will do coming from academia, he will be more willing to contribute for free. And you're like, we need to make a model out of it, a business model out of it. So was he very willing in the get-go, or you had to convince him that it is something that is doable and important and everything?
No, I didn't, because Chris worked previously in Mendeley, right from the beginning of that, almost at the beginning of the company. So he understands the startup world and he understands the models very, very well. He worked later after Elsevier for a corporate company, but then he gave up because he loves the startup world, entrepreneurship, and he's great actually in this. He's not just academic, he's a great he's got great understanding of business actually. So it works very well. I mean, my dream was to build a place where we can put those two words together, to finally speak together to each other the same language and benefit from each other. You know, I was able to connect people across the world. You know, I work for Intel and I found someone in Russia who solves a problem. It was all through my personal connections or introductions or events or something, you know, big problem, but still working, you know, very manual. So I said, you know, we have so many digital tools nowadays. Why don't we solve that problem using those digital tools? This was my kind of image about the platform. And the moment when I met Chris, the idea started taking shapes in terms of product and offering and how to do it. I was more the vision, and Chris started putting together actually how we're going to do it.
I think it's a good time to stop and explain what it is, this platform, for those that don't know it. So basically you have people coming in from the industry and from the academia, and you have a very sort of sophisticated way to introduce one to another, right?
It's you know, I think there's a one way to explain how Smart Tribe works. Some people call us the Tinder for scientists. except it's not a dating. It's a professional network, but the idea is very, very similar. People are familiar with dating apps, and this is very similar business model we have borrowed from them. We're introducing people, we invite people to the platform. It's a free sign up, free, and then we proactively introduce people to each other once a month. And at the beginning, we introduce people, academics and industry people, for the purpose of career advice, simply networking, you know, career advice, sharing knowledge. The industry folks are very interested in what's happening in the research. They want to look, they look for new technologies. They are looking for co-founders. We have loads of people who are management consultants and they want to leave management consultancy, and they're looking people with tech to do something. We have VPs of innovation and R&Ds who are look, looking talented people for their teams. So all kind of reasons for the industry perspective, they want to join us. But obviously for academics, it's network, to build networks, because once you're in academia, you don't have really big network outside of it. And over time, our members, because we're building this place as a community, so people give a lot of feedback and ideas and work with us. They gave us, actually, we also want to talk peers to peers. So now we see more conversations happening between academics. You know, sometimes people want to move to different countries, and they are asking for advice. They are looking for partners on research. So we're realizing, or even they want to learn about research from a different areas. And the same for industry people, they start talking to each other as well. But the general topic is between the introductions between academics and industry. So the academics find it much easier later to progress a career outside of academia.
So give me a few examples of sort of what kind of connections sort of happened on the platform. So for example, if you are still a PhD student or a postdoc, can you get a consultancy project out of it? Can you get, or do you just have like an introductory? What happens online?
So it's really up to people. Chris has written an algorithm which is matching people based on their profiles and their goals and interests. So it's very simple. The onboarding is very simple, and then the matching is happening. And based on that, we say, you know, you two should really speak to each other, because you just done your PhD in cancer and you are the head of R&D in, I don't know, Bayer. So in cancer, so you should speak to each other. But also general advice. So for example, the first introduction in the very first months we started this was two ladies we introduced. One is in Denmark, one was in France, and it started with consultancy. The scientist was a consultant in the food science, and this lady was starting a startup in nutrition, and they start talking to each other, and a few months later it was just started with consultancy for 3 months, and now they are co-founders. Right. That's a nice story. The other stories is people who got idea. There is a great mathematician in South Africa who's developed an algorithm and about sustainable farming in developing regions. And he was introduced to a lady in the United States who was not very interested in that, but got interested in his idea about blockchain and introduced him to her colleagues. And now he's getting a job there. So yes, consultancy, like I said, a lot of our, from the industry side, people are from management consultancy, all these big four consultancy managements, lots of them are there. So I'm looking for experts just per hour or a project. That's happening quite frequently as well.
We've seen a couple of examples of very established PIs leaving academia and going to industry. One that pops to my head is Professor Aviv Regev from the Broad Institute, who left to run a head of discovery for Roche, and she moved from Boston to here to South San Francisco. So, are you seeing this trend or phenomena in your data, PIs or established professors in academia looking to find a contact in industry?
I don't know if this is a new trend, but yes, a lot of this is happening. We have a lot of professors who are actually helping and their students to find jobs as well, and they don't have contacts in industry. So for them, it's very, very nice of them to talk to us and then talk about that. But them leaving the academia, yes, that's, I don't know if it's a new trend, but we see quite a lot of it happening. for positions in on big companies, yes. But we see a lot of people starting companies. We see, and I don't know, yes, I think I see a lot of in Europe and US as well. A lot of universities have new grants or encouraging postdocs to start their own companies at some point. And eventually they are moving away and using that funds and networks and industry. And they at some point, they have to have the connection with industry. Because if you do a startup in the tech space, the corporates, the big companies have to be either your customers or invest in you. So you have to make the, or you want to have a proof of concept. So at some point you have to cross with and talk to industry anyway.
And the connections you're making through the platform, it's not, I guess it's not limited geographically. So if you're in Europe, Germany, for example, you will not be just introduced to German professions or German located companies, right? Or it's more global?
It's very global. Although we are UK-based company, but about 50% of our users are based in the US. And another 40% is European based, and then there's the rest of the world. We see a lot of people coming now more from China and other regions, but US and Europe as the driving. And yeah, indeed, we connect people, you know, we mind the time difference when people speak to each other. So I always feel sorry for the Australians, but in general, people, you know, don't mind how they connect, and especially now everybody's in the London lockdown, so we speak online no matter where we are. Even in the same city, we still speak online. In fact, people want to speak to other regions to understand them better. We have request people asking, you know, some fantastic scientists in particular, I don't know why, from Brazil, are very much looking for the entry to other countries. People from India also are saying, well, can we move to UK or somewhere? They're looking for advice. But also people want to find experience where people, you know, from New York want to move to Germany and wants to some advice how this work for the company in different countries. So it doesn't really matter. And it's interesting, it's breaking the silos geographically, but also across different scientific areas, you know. Industry and academia has one thing in common. People tend to work in silos. So we also believe that making those introductions between academics and industry, but also between academics and between industry people, will a little bit help to break those silos. So people can start seeing and understand what others are working on, not only in different regions, but also on different scientific areas as well, or even within industries as well, and learn from each other and benchmark and so on.
Now that sounds very, very promising. And yeah, for how many, for how long does Smart Tribe run, Sovin?
Actually, it's going to be exactly 1 year.
Yeah, happy birthday.
it's only a year, but you know, it sounds like it's much longer because the community is very big. We have been growing 600% some months, really, really fast, which is great. And it's really nice because the community we have been growing is very special. I really love working with academics. I'm not just trying to please you two because I'm close to you, but it's one of the nicest group of people. Every day I'm starting with looking who registered overnight and the last day, because it's just so many interesting people doing so many interesting things. That's a one thing. Another thing, people who want to contribute, they give feedback. They want to talk, they want to participate. I don't know any other group of people like that.
you can argue that VCs are like that. They always have an opinion.
Yes, but is it really that productive. You know, with VCs, it's all transactional, yeah. Right?
Speaking of communities, we will let them know that we're going to talk to you, and we had a few questions from the audience. So one of them asked, is this a company? Is it a business? So yes, we gathered that. And he was wondering sort of what's the business model? So you said it's free to register, right?
Yes, we are for profit. We are backed up by venture capital and a little bit angel investors. You register for free, sign up for free, and you have a one free introduction per month. And then we provide only recently the premium services, which is about $20 per month membership. For have more introductions, for example, you are very actively looking for a job or something, or for the academics, and also the you have priority matching, much more targeted, so you can more tailor your request, what type of people you want to speak to. So this is priority matching, but this is the business model is B2C. It's we call this the Netflix model. So it's a small fees for just more introduction and also better quality, let's say.
I see. So you don't charge the companies more or something like that?
Well, you know, we're only 1 year old company. We're still experimenting with ideas. and interestingly, companies start coming to us and asking us questions. Say, well, since we are building one of the biggest net platforms in the world of scientists, theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge, some companies coming and asking, can we do a virtual brainstorming? And they start having requests also about teaching ideas of the employees and things like it. So I think there are some ideas in the pipeline going forward we might develop for the companies as well. Using the support from academics and giving them opportunity, obviously, to get to be paid for that.
Virtual brainstorming, that sounds amazing, because instead of getting people in one room, you can get them from across the world, across platforms, across fields of research. So in a couple of instances that I talked to peers in the academia about engaging in those kind of groups, they said, why should I? It's too much work. Help us explain why should they? Like, what the benefit aside of just the interest of facing a challenge? What's the benefit for the PhD, for the postdoc, to engage in this kind of group?
A few to start with. First of all, it's paid. It will be paid because I am very much
It's a good start.
I'm very much against the idea of academics giving away for free more than they already do. They should be paid fairly. Secondly, visibility with companies. We had our first example, I think was a few months ago, was a big financial services company came to us with a problem. They stuck, you know, the big trading floors, and suddenly moving the brokers traders to their homes, not prepared for it, and how technology could solve the problems. And we find actually two people with the new ideas. Visibility with companies, either for commercializing the ideas, technologies, or just getting jobs. Because people, you know, when you do something that you have a voice, you know, when the same way people comment on things on Twitter, on LinkedIn with someone, you get noticed, right? It's the same way. And also learn from others, you know, participating in a brainstorming session with your peers from different regions and different, like you said, scientific backgrounds. I think it's just interesting to talk about the same problem, but talking with others, how we can solve that problem with different solutions, right?
Yeah, to me, it sounds very interesting. It's very fun.
Are there people that are very highly engaged and then you think of maybe you know, upgrading them to like a MC style for those kind of things?
Yes, people find themselves in different moments in life. Sometimes they are busy with families or something else. But yes, we do have a group of people who are truly dedicated and our ambassadors. I remember when we started a year ago, Chris told me, if in 1 year we have a one person who loves what we do, we are fine. And now we have on our Slack, we have a dedicated channel called User Love, when we copy and paste what people send us and also won't talk about on the social media, which is great. I mean, it's really, really rewarding and motivating to help people and to see the difference we are making.
How do you keep in touch with your community?
We just talk to them via, you know, we use the LinkedIn, we have our internal messaging. We are currently start working on our own app, which will help us with this. We have our community engagement manager, Sonia, who is super, super active. We're sending them updates, newsletters. We are frequently asking people to join our user experience to help us to build the platform for them. It's very interesting. This is why I mentioned I love this community, academy community, because they basically claim Smart Drive. This is our place. And they very often come to us, you know what I would really like to have? I said, okay.
Yeah, indeed. I can admit, I like it very much. Yeah, I registered and it was just building the profile was very, very nice because it was very welcoming and it like forced me again to, okay, state out what my interests are, what I am professionally, all kind of stuff. And then just thinking of how do I wanna, and it's very immediate. So how do I offer as a scientist, as a professional, wanna be presented out there to people, to what kind of interest I want to like get them, what kind of interest I want to arise in people. I want to be more science. I want to be more business. What aspects of myself I want to emphasize. Yeah. So that was very nice.
We are rebuilding a little bit the profile right now, but still it's going to be very friendly, very easy, you know, just click the friendly icons, because we want to also make it a little bit pleasant experience. But you know, looking from other people's perspective, this is not research for researchers. You know, there's you have Mendeley, you have ResearchGate, all those other places we go to talk about science. But here it's to network with the outside world of academia. So it's from their a little bit perspective how they perceive you, and the way how they perceive you is how you can contribute to their business, to them, okay? How useful to them. This is very important. So we a little bit push you to present yourself in that way, what you offer and what they offer to you in a this way. But also, you know, just Lena, a little bit answering your question, is so we thank you with the community. We are, because they are so great and so giving and so helping, we're also giving back to the community and organizing a lot of free support. We are doing at least twice a month free webinars for people to participate. And there are hundreds of people participate, which is pretty amazing. We're getting really cool speakers, you know, from career, PhD career coaches, professional people, to people who advise on the very basic things like, you know, how you should go for interview. Or we have a lady who is going to next month about the art of networking. We spoke to John Abel from the global CTO office of Google. We're gonna to speak to the ex CTO of PayPal, who is going to talk about how to best bring idea into great product. You know, so we are bringing a lot of people who love the idea speaking to academics, It's really, really interesting. Very often when I reach out to people and quite senior people in companies, and I pitch the idea, listen, how do you feel to spend 1 hour per month talking to really cool scientists? And say, yeah, I love it. Why not?
And as a member of the community, if you sign up and you set yourself for introductions, you get all this information pushed to you through mail and newsletter, right? So
yes,
you don't have to look for it. It's So that is a great added value for members of the community. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. Also blogs. We have a few other ideas going forward. You know, already start creating a space where people will be able to show off that they research. We call it this grab from the lab. So people can show them, and then we can present later to companies, even investors or other funders. People can start networking. So there's a lot of different ideas we have once we build the team bigger and so on, to give back to the community. So the webinars, advisory, blogs, it's really sometimes simple advice. You know, I wrote a blog about what should postdocs, how much they should charge for the consultancy. As simple as that. People sometimes don't know how much I should charge for per hour or per day. So I wrote a blog about it, you know, and people find this useful. So, oh, okay, now I know it.
I will definitely look it up because I have no idea.
Yeah.
So another pain that I think this platform can contribute. So Lena is one of the key drivers of a researcher community, an Israeli researcher community across the world, and it's organized under a nonprofit NGO called Science Abroad. And a constant pain that goes is, how do I choose a postdoc, or how do I get familiar with what is out there that I can choose from? I was very, very into my PhD project for the last couple of years, and now I need to broaden up. Do I continue the same route? Do I steer to somewhere else? So I think engagement and like mid PhD will be also very good in the platform. Just looking for a postdoc.
Oh, it's so true. We were so focused on connecting industry academia, but suddenly people said, actually, I really want to talk to other PhDs. I want to get advice from them too. We have a master's students who are reaching out, looking for PhDs, ask for advice, if they should do it, where should do it, how should do it. People telling us, you know, we see very often the PhDs also have their own little networks, which are very hermetic, and it's difficult to get through to them. And why don't you introduce us between each other, and we can speak more and learn about our work, and also get advice where to go, how to do this. So yes, you are so right. It's something which we are introducing from next month. People talking between academics talking between themselves.
Yeah, I'm volunteering to be a referent in the Bay Area for UCSF. Yeah, if you need so. I like it there, really. So we usually tend to put an emphasis, because this is like our alma mater. Okay, so science, biology, that's me and Lena, we're from this world. You have engagement from outside of STEM, like social sciences, econ, yeah?
We have, I do admit, about 80% is science. Out of that 80%, it's probably 60% is life science. Life science is very big. We started only with artificial intelligence, but I think it took us a month to realize, oh no, we have to open the gates to everyone. In fact, people were calling us and from life science and say, oh, wait a second, why are you just making exclusive for artificial intelligence? That's not fair. So basically we're forced a little bit, which was great, because right from the start, people claim this is our day space. Yes, 10 to 20%, it's difficult to say, it's the humanities. And it's an interesting one, because we see a lot of people start talking to each other between science and humanities, trying to solve similar problems from the ethics perspective, psychology, social injustice and how does it impact in different. It's very, very interesting. I've noticed some interesting discussions between. So we thought, oh, the humanities want to talk between themselves, but actually no, the conversation is happening across. But yes, the vast majority are from STEAM.
Well, I wonder if I could be a fly on your data stream that seems to wake up with so many interesting conversation. That sounds amazing.
It's super interesting, super interesting. And we see this is just the beginning. It's truly thrilling because those conversations are happening between the brightest people in the world. So I feel really privileged to be able to facilitate this and be part of it.
Reminds me of why I said science abroad has to have a large online communities. Like there are so many interesting people with similar interests that they will find what to talk about once we give them the platform.
And it surpassed science. It became personal. People are mm-hmm. like also supporting, like mentally, emotionally, and so a community took a form of its own outside of just being professional.
And it's
amazing. Yeah, really.
Yes. Yes, when we first talk only about jobs, it was a place where people were just complaining, let's say. but when we said, introduce different topics and different people, then conversations start taking different shapes. And we keep reminding people, this is not a recruitment website. This is networking. It's a professional network. If you want to find a job, go and network. And ask to be introduced to people, just don't ask for the job, but to network. So it's a very different approach and intentions. The other, maybe it's just part of being, altruistic and part of the scientific community, but I believe that the need for talking to scientists will be even bigger now than before, because what the whole world has to go through for the past few months, because people and companies care more and more for the basic, what we should be, for the social justice, for healthcare, sustainability, and so on. And who is better trained than actually academics to bring the good habits and attitude to companies, right?
Yeah, It really balances out you start as an academic for humanity, for people, for science, and it get balanced with a need for profit at the end. In a for-profit company, you have a bottom line. So fresh ideas from academia, which are more like for humanity, it balances out, and the outcome, I think, would be much better at the end.
Yes, yes, and companies now talk about it much more, but they don't have tradition doing that. So the diversity, sustainability, mm-hmm. Caring about employees is much, much more important. Different generations, also the experience we all had to go through the past few months and so on, is important. So I think academics bringing that good attitude and way of thinking will be more valuable than even before.
Cool. So just before we end up, from your experience, past experience before Smart Tribe and the things and data you learned from daily, I guess now in the last year when you see the platform growing, could you give our listeners maybe a do and don't in how they plan their career?
Big question, Alfred.
It's a big question. Actually, I'm just remembering because I wrote a blog about it as well. Just giving an example.
So first of all, we will post also the link for the blog and all the links for Smart Tribe to apply, all the blog and everything will be posted as part of the episode information.
There are a few blogs when I talk about how to look for a job during the time when there are no jobs. And also there is a blog how the one where a PhD works for industry. So it's a little bit it's about how industry perceives PhDs, okay? About being sometimes too geeky, too precise, too insisting on some points. You're trying to do your job the best, but the people in this industry says, oh my God, he or she is so difficult, right? Nothing in the industry doesn't expect everything perfect, okay? If you say 70%, oh, it's already very good. You know, it doesn't have to be 90%. And timings are very different for industry. Industry is now, we have to bring to this market the product. Now it's a return on investment, you know, and so on. They absolutely hate when people come to them, oh, I have to do more research. I mean, no, don't ever say that. they will never listen. This is very common in science. I have to do more research. No, they will never let you do more research. So there are a few tips on, you know, how to behave with industry, how to answer questions, and how to look for a job. Obviously, I'm going to say networking is the best way, especially 60% of good jobs are not being advertised. Okay. 60% of jobs for scientists are not being advertised by companies. Many reasons why is that, but then when there is a need for someone, what the managers do very often, the first thing what they do, they reach their network, or they reach network within the employees. That's why we very often asking people who are already transferred to academia, to industry, and they have PhD, and say, well, why don't you give back a little bit and join us and tell people how it is to work for companies. And then they network, and they say, and when the opportunity comes to one, say, oh, I know someone. So 60% is a lot, especially in the life science. I actually came across a situation where the pharmaceutical companies were putting fake job ads. This was for, you know, to this mislead competition. So really networking, getting to know people, talk to them, being visible is very important. Learn about those companies also. Learn about the people with them. It's super important, you know, like in life, we have parents, we have teachers who guide us, sometimes find a mentor. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, I think networking is really hard for scientists. I remember when I just moved to the States and my husband was doing an MBA, and I was supposed to find a job in a lab in one of the universities at Harvard in Boston. So Harvard, MIT, I was open to suggestions. And everybody told me to network. And I said, no, I'm a scientist. You know, I have, you know, I know some methods. I know I have some background. I have some experience. Nothing of what I will do is related to being nice to people, to talk to people, to, you know, to sort of chit-chat. And I couldn't understand the concept. And it took me, I think, about 4 months to realize what is networking and how you do it, and that it's almost impossible to get ahead without it. And I really had to have that sort of switch in my mind from, this is not related to me, to I have to use it because otherwise I won't find a job. And eventually I absolutely found a job through networking that worked out really nicely. So to all the researchers listening to us, that's you have to do it. There's just no other way.
Well, that's why we came up with the idea of introductions, of proactive introductions, because, you know, we are aware that many of academics are introverts, and it's very hard. It's really, really hard. It's not just for clients, for anyone to network, to come to this one. That's why, you know, people are, you can do it on LinkedIn, right? But you don't go to ping everyone. Some people do it. That's why we're doing the proactive introduction and saying, well, here it's LENAP, we should speak to offer because you have this interest, this background, you study each other and so on. We also introducing different tools on the platform that people actually can select each other, star each other. Oh, I really like that person because they can see each other as well. They kind of carousel with profiles passing and people just say pick each other as well. But they, even they pick each other, we're still making this proactive introduction between them, introducing them. And then once they introduce, we are breaking the ice. We are also giving a lot of tips, you know, how to break the ice, what to talk about, you know, have this first kind of conversation about weather or whatever, what to talk about, not what should ask. And, you know, remember to follow up the conversation. Remember to stay in touch. When you read to this person, you know, article about something and you know the other person is interested in it, forward, say hello from time to time. Things like it. It's small things, but really, really matter. I mean, for me, it was very important in business and everybody else, you know, for so many years. But people really appreciate this small things in particular. So yes, the networking is very human thing, right? And we know how to be social, how to use social media nowadays.
And we had the last 5 months to really miss being social.
we switched. We're social in a different way.
Being social took a turn in the last couple of months.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Beatrice, that sounds amazing, and I wish that you had started like 5 years ago, so I could apply during my PhD, and it would make things a lot simpler. But to our listeners, we will leave the link to where to apply and for the blogs, and and thank you for doing that, for being so passionate about it and talking to us about it, and I wish you good luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. Absolutely pleasure to talk to. What I would say, yes, join us. Just give it a go. Just a try and see how it is. And tell others and maybe find it useful as well.
Yeah, I think our audience will find it useful both during their PhDs or postdocs to sort of gain experience, make their maybe CV a bit sort of thicker, learn about the industry, and then once they're ready for the job search, first of all, they can use the system, but also their experience through Smart Tribe could really help them in the next stage. So this sounds very, very exciting. So I hope it works out well, continues to grow, as you say. So thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lena and Ofer.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Bye, guys.